Welcome, and you're listening to the Geekologist Radio, a division of the Ninja Pancake family of podcasts. And now...
Shut up and sit down!
Hey, it's Christopher, and welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through our queue and ride the hype train into the future. We're trying something a little bit different this week. We're actually going to be breaking up our gaming as well as our movies and film podcasts. We're going to separate these up into two separate podcasts. We've had some folks internally talked about the fact that some people listen to just the gaming section and some people listen to the TV and movie section. So we're still going to have the hype train. We're still going to have the NRQ for both of these. But what we're going to do is we're going to separate those out, and we are going to tweet out and kind of shout out what dates those are going to be out to the public. I have a feeling from internally what we're talking about is Mondays and Wednesdays, but we'll see where that goes. And then we've also got some stuff in the works for our Game of Thrones. So we're going to start this one with our Errors and Omissions, and this is for our gaming. It's actually for our TV and film.
Yeah.
So let's start with TV and film.
But also... Cajun and Damien are here, so that's the other part of it too.
Yeah.
Cajun and Damien, I was out last week too.
No, I was talking about, we skipped the whole, like, first up we have these hosts and all this stuff here.
Oh, damn, I'm so sorry. Listen, I'm so excited about
to feel last week, and me
they're,
and Chris
seriously.
And Damien and Brandon are just like, bring everyone in. Who? All of them. Bring in Jinx and get Remy too. Bring in Elderberry. Brandon, bring in your wife.
Imagine going to like a kid's bowling alley with duck bowling where there's those baby bumpers on the sides, except there's no bumpers and the kids are just throwing stuff everywhere. That is last week's episode.
Yeah.
It was fun though, but yeah, no, it was, I attempted to pull the general.
I felt
and
for you.
It did
I
not
felt
work.
For you. Like I could hear you going, but guys, let's talk about what's on the piece of paper in front of me.
I felt like a bumper listening last week. I'm like, I really just want to get in the lane right now. I enjoyed a lot of the drama because I really got into some funny stuff there. But the OCD control freak that does the stuff with the show notes is like, do this instead. I'm like, doing all the hand signals and stuff like that while we're listening, but we're back. Bumpers engaged.
Bumpers engaged. As a side note, I'm talking to Brandon behind the scenes, and I'm like, so when do you get into your queue and like have a questions with Remy? He's like, oh, about the 35-40 minute mark. And I'm like, so that's the first thing that we had said on the show notes. So you could tell that it kind of went a little off the rails, but that's okay. Like, that's kind of our podcast. It's kind of a conversational deal. We have notes, which is our rails, but honestly, it's conversational, and that's the best part of our podcast. We do have some errors and omissions, though. Yeah. Some things that Cajun and I noticed from the sidelines. Cajun, I know you have a couple of things to talk about.
Yeah. So, David, you have your hand up. Do you want to acknowledge any of these?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah, so I'm going to acknowledge the fact that we failed to introduce Elderberry as one of the new hosts, which is also, that's Jeff. He is actually a new host to Geekologist Radio. He will be probably on about every other episode or so, depending on with schedule wise and whatnot, as well as him and another to be announced here soon, host are going to be creating new exciting content that'll be coming our way. And you know, they're going to be making a few different things, and they'll test it out. If it hits, if it gets an audience, they'll stick with it. If it doesn't, they'll be bringing other stuff. So you're going to see a lot of stuff right now with Geekologist Radio being more fluid. But the end goal is to try to bring you quality content 5 to 7 days a week if we can pull it off and get enough of us editing and everything. So that's going to be between YouTube. That's going to be between some streaming here and there. But mostly in the podcast format. So that's
what I love about Jeff is he's like, it's the alchemist. It's like, you know, what can I put into this pot and then stir it up in this witch's brew? And then what is it going to produce? Because that guy's brain is like that, which is awesome, because some of the stuff he comes up with and some of the stuff he's come up with in the past has been just amazing. And so to have him and our other unannounced guest who we'll be talking about in the next few weeks come on, super excited to bring them on to Geekologist Radio as a whole. And we're just beyond happy to have those guys.
Yeah, and not to overpromise and then deliver, we're going to try to get as much content, quality content to you guys as you can. So the main thing you want to look for in terms of podcasts, this is where you're listening to this now, is that in your feed from Geekologist Radio, you're going to see stuff that's not going to be your standard show. Even just the shows like we're doing now is going to be an NRQ show and a Game On show. But we'll have other stuff coming in there as well, too. But those are all going to be branded as to what they are, so you can know what to expect. So it won't be a hodgepodge of random things in one show. It's going to be different shows, and then you can listen to the ones you like. Or if you like them all, go for it. One thing we did forgot to mention is Brandon is not here this week. He is connecting the internet to most of rural Utah right now. So when he gets caught up with reconnecting the internet to most of rural Utah, he'll be back.
Shout out to Salt Lake.
Salt Lake has their own stuff. They have freaking fiber. He's down in southern Utah.
He checked in with us before we started from the road. He was actually driving up to a place of business to reconnect their internet as we're recording right now. So yeah, he has a lot of busy work going for him right now. And two things I want to cover
Shout out to Elderberry on these.
Yeah, shout out to Elderberry and Jeff on these, because I caught these and then when I was about to post them in our channel and our Discord where we discuss our Arizona missions, he got to them first. I was like, I heard them too. One, he said that Okja was in the North Korea. The farm is that they raise Okja on is in South Korea. Those are two very different countries. They're close and they're both Korea, but very different countries and make two very different movies. And then the actor in Okja who played Gustavo Fring in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, his name is Giancarlo Esposito. He struggled with that one and just gave up on it, but we wanted to clarify that name, and I wanted to give him some crap for it that I did in Discord as well too. But yeah, those are our Aaron emissions for this week. They all revolve on Elderberry, two for him and two for us.
As always with errors and omissions, we get pretty passionate and it's off the cuff a lot of times. We have stuff that's written down and then we get really excited. So the things that we are saying, we don't intentionally try to say them and mislead our audience. It just happens on accident, but we own up to all of those errors quickly. And most of the time it's internally that we're getting that call out too.
And it even happens with our guests sometimes, and we just run with it when they missay our names.
Yeah, Cuban. I didn't even catch it. Like, I said that after the fact. I thought that she was talking about somebody else in the ether. Like, I didn't realize she was talking to me, Cuban, the whole time. But there's also other times where there's something that's missed in the show notes that gets skipped over, and we're constantly scrolling it down and, like, pointing arrows to it. But yeah, there's lots of fun stuff that happened here. But man, we're kind of going off the rails already. And we said we're bringing in some bumpers, and I don't know if me and Chris are the bumpers for getting into the gutter right now. I don't know. But let's get into NRQ.
All right. So for NRQ, the first thing that we're going to talk about, and man, I don't even know how I stumbled upon the ranch. Apparently, other people know about this show. It was on accident for me. It was one of those things where you're watching Netflix and you say to your wife, "Hey, this looks like it's funny," and it had Ashton Kutcher. So right immediately, I was like, "Oh, this is not going to be great. Like, this is going to be bad." And then I realized it has, like, I would say like 60% of the cast of that '70s show. And I'm like, "Well, that show is pretty good." So it's basically about a former star high school quarterback whose father and brother work on a ranch. The father has had the ranch passed down to him through his family. The quarterback, which I actually liked, was not a star quarterback in the NFL. The guy got a cup of coffee in the NFL, was mostly a B-list, like, kind of arena league guy, played for some smaller teams, and then just scrapped his way, kind of... The best way to describe it is he basically effed up his career by sleeping with women and drinking a lot, is kind of how it went. He thought he was bigger than he was. And so blew out college and then was a backup. And then so now he has to come back to the ranch. And when he comes back to the ranch, he realizes that things aren't as great as he thought they were in his head. And people had to pick up the slack while he was gone. His mom and his father are not together. They're married yet separated. His mom owns a bar. Dad run the ranch. And he goes and helps out his brother and his dad. And they try to fix this ranch. And the thing about this show was they recorded 30 episodes, so three seasons, 10 episodes a season, all in a row. Like, this thing was shotgunned all in a row. It's executive produced by Ashton Kutcher. Danny Masterson's in it. a person that I thought that like kind of blew me off the page was Sam Elliott. If you know Sam Elliott and you guys were right. talking about it, I know him from Mask. You guys were talking about other movies that he was in.
I really want him to play Tom in the Wheel of Time series. And I think most Wheel of Time fans want him to play the bard Tom in that series because he would be fantastic.
Well, you might also know him from the first Hulk film.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He's a general now. He plays military.
A lot. He's the sheriff. And very well. That mustache.
For a guy in his mid-70s, he doesn't look aged at all. And on top of that, he's got that Tom Selleck mustache, which is like iconic. Like when I think of him, I think of that
mustache. His mustache is better than Tom Selleck's.
Well, it is. Well, also because it's got pepper in it. It's salt and pepper in it. It's a nice mustache. Alicia Cuthbert is in this too. Which I thought was really, really cool. Will Valderrama is in it. There's a bunch of people in it. Basically, what I'm saying to you is it's dumb stupid. Like, it is, like, literally country bumpkin dumb funny comedy. And here's the part that totally threw me off guard. So I thought – I was watching with my wife, and I'm like, oh, this is probably a show that's on ABC, NBC. I didn't even think – because it was on Netflix, I just assumed it was, like, something they had bought out, kind of like Friends, right? And then the first F-bomb that Sam Elliott throws out, I'm like, oh, shit. They're actually cursing. This is what a comedy should be on TV for a half an hour, because they're half an hour episodes. So this is not you're not investing a lot of time. It does progress the story, but man, they drop the F-bomb a lot, and it just every time they do it, it makes me smile because I'm like, this is what a real ABC comedy should be. Like, I want to see the real stuff. So when a guy like totally F's up and he's like and throws the F-bomb out, yeah, that's what people would say in real life, and this is what the show does. That's why I really like the show. If you're into something that is A, a comedy, B, is not, it's like real simple humor, something you don't have to invest a ton of time into. Again, half hour episodes. I cannot recommend The Ranch enough. I blazed through that season in about a week and a half, three seasons, like literally 30 episodes in about a week and a half for me. And I have my wife angry at me now, who's backloaded by like 4 or 5 episodes because I finished it up to almost for this. I'm like one episode away. And she's like, what the hell are you doing? Why did you watch that? We didn't watch it together. She was actually mad about it. And she doesn't like that kind of stuff. But she was laughing. I was laughing out loud. That's the part that I knew. That's how I know it was good. I was actually laughing out loud. I'm like, this is really funny. So there's some things he says. And it, like, they have... okay, curse words. They have dick jokes, and they have like this joke, and it's like brothers, and then they, there's some misogyny jokes, which are funny. Some of them are hot, some of them hit, but like all in all, it's just really, really good humor. Again, I love The Ranch. I think it's really good, and so I'm not going to talk about it anymore, but I can't recommend it enough.
Well, now you got me wanting to see it, so
it's funny. Well,
you're actually the first positive review I've had of The Ranch. Like, I've had people who I don't trust who like TVs and movies tell me it's good, and people I have trust have been like, nah. But your first positive review of somebody whose opinion I trust. Like, oh, okay. What's going on here?
So I've also watched with my wife to appease the other part of watching The Ranch and some other shows. And we watched season 5 of Orange is the New Black. I've not watched the previous seasons. I know two things about Orange is the New Black. One, Ruby Rose was in it. And two, there's a character named Piper. Like, that's it. That's all I knew. In this season,
and you happen to know who Ruby Rose is. I know who Ruby Rose is.
I knew who Ruby Rose was because she was in the news so often that it was a big to do.
Okay, gotcha.
And so that's kind of how I know basically who she is. I had an idea of Natasha Leone is in it, and she plays Nikki. She was also in American Pie. So if the one who was the I'm trying to think of who the girl was. She talked with Stifler quite a bit about Stifler's mom, and she played like an offset girl in American Pie. She was in all three.
She was one of her first movies was The Slums of Beverly Hills.
The Slums of Beverly Hills. Okay. I recognized her right away when I saw her. But in any case, the objective of this season is that the prison takes over the girls in the prison take over the prison. They capture the guards, and they're negotiating with the outside. Specifically the governor, over a girl who was killed wrongly by a prison guard. And so the negotiations go okay to start. However, one of the guards is shot in the upper thigh. We'll just say upper thigh.
Spoiler alert.
No, not spoiler alert. He's shot in the upper thigh. There's nothing. I can spoil the rest of it. That's just that happens in the first 5 minutes of the show.
Of season five.
Season five.
So
yeah,
spoiler alert for season five.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. So in any case, he's shot in the upper thigh. What happens after that is a progression of the season. At the first like four or five episodes, I'm like, wow, this is pretty good. Like, I'm actually kind of into it. Some of the comedy was a little too in your face with the girl on girl stuff. Like, it was really like they were pushing it like really hard. Like, it didn't catch me the right way. I mean, I understand it's an all girls present, and I understand that there are lesbian themes and that's kind of the premise of the show. But it was so in your face all the time about it that I thought that like they could have pulled back a little bit and it would have hit a little bit harder. But I guess maybe that's the premise of the show for the first four seasons. Again, I really haven't watched it aside from this season. And overall, it was okay. It ended on a cliffhanger at the end where I felt like it didn't punch with what it led up to. All of these episodes were like leading to the finale, and I'm like, okay, this is gonna happen, and then it left me down. It was like, okay, so we're just gonna leave it at a cliffhanger for season six, which is great and all, but it never closed season five, so I never felt emotional attachments even at the end for some of the characters. Maybe because I haven't had the other four seasons to go along with it, but my wife, who's watched it all the way through, even said the same thing, like, I don't understand, like, it doesn't make any sense. Why didn't they tie up this bow, at least a little bit? So it, from an outsider's perspective on Orange is the New Black, I don't know if I would go back and watch the previous four because I was kind of left with a distaste, although she said this wasn't as great of a season as the other four have been. But even from somebody who's a veteran of the show, she didn't care for it very much. So, I mean, There's that. I don't want to talk too much more into it because, again, I'm not very proficient in it, but I watched it. It was okay. I just thought that some of the themes were a little too in your face, and they didn't really flesh out a lot of the plot. The plot wasn't fleshed out at all. It was just kind of very vague. It's like girls mad, angry, girl died, we're going to fight. And so they didn't. They tried to delve into characters, but they really didn't do a good job. It was more like I think maybe they were trying to go for the inmates trying to run the asylum, which is what was basically the theme of this thing. And it felt so cluster-effed that it never really got to a point. So I think that that's the part that I was really flustered with. And it always left you with like just enough to think that that was going to happen, and then it didn't. So every episode left you with it's finally going to come together, and then it doesn't, and then it doesn't, and it doesn't. And so maybe that was a hook. I don't know. For me, it kind of left me soured. That's all.
Okay. Yeah. You need to pay off some of those things.
I've only seen like the first season. I only watched that because Jason Biggs was in it.
Jason Biggs was in this was in this for like half an episode for like a second. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's Jason Biggs. Then I thought the American Kai connection. I'm like, oh, no, they were in American Pie together.
Now, now that Chris has done these shows, I was talking to him earlier about like potential other shows. Now, I've mentioned ad nauseum. Watch freaking Fargo. I mean, that's a fantastic show. Watch Better Call Saul, fantastic show. But there's another one on Netflix here. And, this is Hulu. And it got a lot of buzz. And it's The Handmaid's Tale. And I finally broke down and watched the first two episodes of The Handmaid's Tale. Any of y'all familiar with the plot of The Handmaid's Tale?
I'm not.
Okay.
Little bit.
Okay. So, could you guess... Chris, can you guess what time frame it's set in, just judging by the pictures and trailers?
Oh, I didn't even see the pictures in the trailers. Okay. But if you say a Handmaid's Tale, are we talking like early 1900s or is it farther than that?
See, I thought it was a dystopian future is what I thought.
It's a dystopian future. And I thought I was with Chris originally when I clicked it on. Like, this is talking about something in the past. No, it's it actually has less of a dystopian future. So... this isn't a spoiler, and I'm not going to spoil it because this is basically the premise of the show. And actually, the first scene is set in the present. And so you right away, you're like, okay, this is what I'm getting into. And it's important to know that because the future is when the dystopian nature of the future is only very few women can get pregnant. Now, there's lots of other things going on in the world right now. America is internally it seems like at least one civil war is going on. And that's something you get like right away. And so, but it is mature. There are scenes of, it's like, there's rape right away in the first episode. And it's tough to get through. Even the second one, there's a couple of scenes that made it a little tougher to get through, but it's extremely well done. It's extremely smart and has just enough stuff because you're seeing it all in the town that these handmaids live in and the people that are around them. And so you have all of this other stuff going on that they're just getting bits and pieces of information in. So for you and for me, I want to know what's going on in the outside world. So I'm getting hooked right now because I want to know what's going on in the outside world. It just got 11 Emmy nominations. So it is, all the buzz seems to be legit so far. They can, hopefully they dial back the disturbing scenes to keep it just the interesting scenes in there. And I think we could make, they have one hell of a show in their hands. So my wife actually bowed out. The disturbing scenes were too much for her, but I'll probably finish it up when I'm doing my show time.
Nice. So I saw a good. I just realized I have a fan going. Hang on one second.
Leave this in the show files right here. Like, we don't need to edit it. Yeah. This is in the show right here. Because we couldn't hear the fan at all.
At all. Seriously, it was a ghost fan.
It was a ghost fan. Couldn't hear it. Wasn't there. Non-existent fan. But
it's a cure for his wellness.
It was curing his wellness. I think that's what it is. Yeah.
So I saw a film that my boys decided they wanted to rent, and then I checked it out too. And I wanted to see it in theaters, but it came out at a time when there's a lot of films coming out. It stars Dane DeHaan, which I know Cajun, you like Dane DeHaan because he's in Chronicle and things like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard like you talk about.
Yeah, he was and he was the villain in the Chronicle.
Oh yeah, I like that dude. You've said his name before. I recognize you said his name before, but I couldn't place it. But yes, I did like Chronicle, and I did like that dude.
He's also Varian in the City of a Thousand Planets.
Oh, Valerian. Oh, okay, yeah.
Valerian, yes.
I will like him in that too, because if the trailer's trying to be.
And he's also the Green Goblin in one of the Spider-Man ones that didn't make it.
Oh, like Amazing Spider-Man 2 or something. He's doing great stuff, apparently. He's just in stuff I haven't watched besides Chronicle.
Yeah, no, he's in tons of stuff. Well, he's kind of taken on a role, and even if you look at him, especially in this film, he looks like a younger Leonardo DiCaprio. And his roles that he's starting to grab are starting to be – he's starting to grab more roles that are kind of tilting him that direction. This film almost felt like it could have been a sequel to Shutter Island, which was a Leonardo DiCaprio-led film.
Oh, because of the setting or because of the twist?
The setting, the twists, absolutely every part of it until you get to the end. And this movie, it's a long film. It's excellent. Like, it's got a lot of disturbing images in it, and it's because... And it's not... so disturbing because of like say sexual things. There's like one like scene that's kind of like that, but it was just it's a thriller horror hybrid, but more on this case of the thriller being similar to like a thriller like The Get Out. Okay. And it would make you think, if you're watching it, you would think, oh, they're back in the time frame that Shutter Island was filmed, but it's not. It takes place in the present. It's just that there feels like where a lot of the stuff takes place at, like it's in like kind of like a time loop, so to speak. And it gives a lot of false endings. Now, I talked about this last episode a little bit, but I wanted to talk more about it because I actually watched it a second time. And it just it's something that you want to watch and you need to actually, like, it's not something you can put on and kind of sit and come back to and get the gist of. You really need to pay attention to it. But it's something that deserves you to sit and pay attention to it, because there's so many little hints that are weaved in through it that my second time watching it, I picked up. I'm like, hey, that was a hint to this part of the movie. This was a hint. The writers really wove in a lot of clues to the kind of the end of the movie and the final like, you know, last 10, 15 minutes of
nice.
It.
Sounds like rewatching some stuff you could. Oh yeah, they hinted all this stuff already, but
yeah, and that's the thing. It's like because for me, when I first talked about it, I said, oh, there's all these false endings. Well, yeah, there kind of is. And the only reason that you would think they're false endings, honestly, is if you've seen some of the other films like Shutter's Island, you're kind of like, oh, it's like these one of these movies. It's going to end like this. And so we are accustomed to things that end like that. And so we're kind of like desensitized to it. We're like, okay, so this is how it's going to be. You accept it. And then it throws you for a couple more loops, which was something that was really good. And Dane DeHaan's just doing great things. I can't compliment the young actor enough. Looking forward to everything else he's got coming out, especially Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. Yes.
Valerian just got bashed bad, man.
Oh, reviews are released on it?
Yeah, reviews are coming out. IGN came out with a score. I know it's not like Rotten Tomatoes type score, but we're talking like a 6.3, 6.5.
But you know, but the thing is, yeah, is that the same thing happened with The Fifth Element originally. It didn't get the best reviews.
Now,
and that became a cult classic.
I'll look at Metacritic too, because IGN has been normally miss with me in terms of TV show movie reviews, especially lately. Like stuff I really like, they bash, and stuff that I don't think is good, they love. I mean, I've been polar on IGN in terms of what they like and what versus what I like. So that's disappointing, because we were talking about July when we did our hype train of all the July trailers, like what was our movie we were most excited to see, and I think across the board we liked a lot of stuff, but Valerian was right up there at the top, and right now if you look at
67% on Rotten Tomatoes,
yeah, right now your Rotten Tomatoes scores are your highest for Spider-Man and Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I mean, that's great, but that's surprising considering the director and the source material.
Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. But and that's devastating for this movie because it doesn't have a pre-existing mm-hmm. fan base.
No, and this would be the start
yeah.
of a franchise, and so that's the thing is this is the start of a franchise. Hopefully it. My hope is that it sees the success that, you know, Transformers and stuff sees, that even though critics might pan it, it gets the box office dollar.
But
it's already got 36 reviews.
Yeah, but Transformers is not success. I mean, it made money internationally. The thing that's going on with this is that it's in the middle of a huge month. July is huge, and mm-hmm. with Game of Thrones coming up, you're competing with a lot of eye time, a lot of people with a lot of great, well-reviewed movies, and I mean, if you're not an 8 or a 9 in this month, you're just gonna get pub stomped by everything that's coming before you. Because
Homecoming will be in theaters for a long time after. Because yeah, any Marvel film that comes out and it hits like this one,
if you're looking, looking at the top box office right now, Spider-Man's at 117, Despicable Me's at 33.6, Baby Driver, which is critically acclaimed. Like, there are so many people on my Twitter feed that are like, you need to go see Baby Driver, it's amazing. 13.1
mm-hmm.
Like that tells you everything you need to know about where iTunes movies are. People hear about those kind of movies and they're like, that sounds amazing, I'll wait till it comes out so I can just watch it at home.
Yep, you go see the big stuff on the screen,
blockbusters at the theater, right? Yep.
And we'll get to Spider-Man here in a bit, but just wanted to do kind of a spoiler thing. We're going to cover two things coming up. We're going to cover the Castlevania series on Netflix, and we're going to cover Spider-Man. We will be getting into spoilers on those. So if you don't want to hear spoilers on the Castlevania series as a whole, season one, or Spider-Man Homecoming, the movie, go ahead and skip ahead to the Hype Train section in the show notes. And so that's your warning. We're going to get into spoilers. Probably not too bad, but at the same time, if you want to avoid them, jump ahead. But first, let's get into Castlevania season one. It was only 4 episodes. This should have just been a movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally agree.
I feel the same way.
I was thinking that as soon as I saw it. I'm like, 4 episodes, why bother? Like, and the anime was fantastic.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing.
It was really well done. Mm-hmm. The plot was really well done. But man, that first episode took forever to get into that second episode to figure out what the hell was going on.
Yeah, but it needed like, it. I mean, it needed it, though.
Yeah, it was the backstory, which is what was necessary. But like, okay, like I want to hear about the Belmonts, man. Like, let's get to the Belmonts.
I didn't care. So. I didn't care about the Belmonts because what it did in this one was it gave me some dang good characters and it gave me understanding and I was able to empathize with Dracula's emotions. He overreacted very, very much so. To the death of
she was
his
at
wife.
The stake, man. She was at the stake.
Yeah, but basically he's leveling an entire region because of that. And so that's very good because you rarely get to empathize with a villain. And I think that's pretty strong to be able to empathize with him and be able to take that to the overreaction and to empathize with characters that come later. So I like that first one. But how each episode just tied right into the next one, very literally, this really should have been a movie unless Netflix is just testing something. And this was set to be a movie. And they're like, let's make it 4 episodes and see if people like it that way. No, just make it a movie.
Yeah, because you think about it, it was only 22 minutes per episode.
Yeah,
so.
20 to 25 minutes an episode. This is an hour and a half, hour 45 minute movie.
Yeah. And I appreciated was the voice acting was really well done. Again, all of the... Any of the art style that was done for this movie was really well done. And then if you read ahead and you know that they've already had a plan for season 2, like season 2 was a go prior to this even coming out. Like they already had created season 2, it had already been ready. And it was like, oh, okay, well, season 1's great. Sweet. We already have season 2 all lined up for you. So that makes me think that this was longer than it really was because right. They already had the season 2 ready to go. And the producer of the show said, yeah, we're all set to go with season 2.
Yeah, they probably got some of the episodes. Something weird made it be 4 short episodes. Whatever that was in the background, being it was a movie originally, or it was a longer season and Netflix wanted to do something different, whatever that was. But it doesn't detract from the quality for me.
What it did is it felt more like it was an introduction kind of to the Monk backstory with Marco Polo that they put out. Marco Polo the series they put out the
Legend of 100 Eyes or something like that. Yeah.
Yes, yep. They put out that and that's what this kind of felt like. This felt like, hey, we're going to put out our feelers. This is something we're going to do and then if you like it, this is an ability for us to put out something else cuz you know, when we have a lull on shows. Because right now they don't want to put out, they want to hold something over for the after the effects of the Defenders. So they need something that's going to get a lot of pub for after that.
Yeah, I don't think this has that kind of pub. I mean, it's going to be good. People are going to like it, but this is a unique crowd. Like this is your video game crowd. I mean, this is like you need to be able to handle some mature content in this. I mean, I love how
you do
that magic. Science and religion in this. It was a brilliant weave of that tapestry. That was great and well done. But a lot of people can't handle those topics being discussed at the level they were being talked about with demons and vampires and the gore that was in this. So this is a very unique crowd for it.
This is super niche. This is people who like Castlevania, which is already niche to begin with, video games, which is niche to begin with, and then also people who like anime. So you're real. I mean, it keeps dialing down.
No, I think it dials out with those three, but it's still niche because if you like any of those three, I think you like this. You don't need to like all three, but I think if you like any single one of those, you like this because this
and
has a broad appeal, but it's a broad appeal for a small audience.
I guess that would be true because I'm not an anime fan at all. And the fact that it was Castlevania was the reason why I watched it. Yep. And so and then when I watched it, I was like, oh, okay, wow, I guess I'm in. And I was extremely interested. The first episode, I gave it the second episode because I wasn't interested in the first episode.
Oh, really?
I really wasn't. It was a backstory stuff. I was backstory and I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool, but like, where is it going? And then when I saw episode 2, I was really in, and then I was excited about the rest of it. So the other three, they just flew by. Mm-hmm. The first one kind of dragged for me, but the other three really, really flew by. And I was talking to you guys earlier. I had posted... Castlevania, I thought was overall really well done. What else would you like to see? And on Twitter, I got Link, I got, you know, Mario Brothers, and there were some other stuff. Obviously, Assassin's Creed is coming out because they announced that Assassin's Creed is going to be something that the producer of this is going to be working on. And I raised my hand immediately. I was like, Samus, this would be amazing for Metroid. And then that day, the producer comes out and says, man, I would really like to make a dark version of Metroid. And I'm like, yes, this would be awesome. I was talking about Metroid or Star Fox. I thought either one of those would be really cool. The problem is Nintendo, being family friendly, holds these things so dear to their heart that they're not going to allow a dark version of Samus. They're not going to let anybody taint this. Konami was with Castlevania, so they don't really care what happens to Castlevania. It's dark to begin with.
I got another one that's Konami that would be good.
Street Fighter?
Contra.
Oh, Contra. Contra would be good. Yeah, Contra would be kind of cool too.
Yeah. That.
You could go dark with that.
It's a shoulder show, yeah.
The reason why I said Metroid, aside from that, is if anybody knows, and obviously people who listen to this would probably know this, is when you have a game that's called a Metroidvania game, a combination of Metroid and Castlevania, they both have that dark theme. They both have the same kind of concept where you go back, collect things, and then you're able to enter into areas. They have this parallel to each other, which is why I also said Metroid. I thought that it would be relevant as far as Castlevania is concerned, too.
Now, the characters of the speakers, are we familiar? Were they in the Castlevania series? That have y'all any memory on those characters?
Oh man, it's been so long. I don't off the top of my head. I played the games, loved them, but yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, I really like those characters, especially the granddaughter character. I forget her character's name now. That was really awesome and surprise to see, because she, because we're in spoilers now, I mean, she brings the magic to the table. Trevor Belmont character, he had great depth. Yeah, he has strong motivations to be where he was throughout everything he did. Although he was changing throughout this short season, he had strong motivations, and you saw them coming through. And he had humor. I mean, this was a well thought out characterization of a character who didn't have much dialogue and characterization in the game series.
Yeah, it was interesting for it to be Trevor. My first Belmont, you know, of course, was Simon.
What I thought about the season was that they left me wanting more, but they were able to end things in a way that I felt satisfied with. So I definitely want to see where things go, but I felt like this cut itself off at a point. So if they had to separate, so perhaps they had both seasons already recorded, they just split them in two and thought this was the halfway point, this is where it cuts and we need to go on to the next half. I thought that this ended at a point where it could be its own thing, and then it could move on to something else if it needed to be, which I appreciate, because it doesn't look like they half-assed it. It looked like this was intentional.
Yeah, that could have been the catalyst for it. Y'all have a rating. What would you think you give this this series?
Oh, man. For me personally, I would probably give it an 8. Like, there are some things where I still would have liked to seen a few other things, and also, again, not an anime fan. So, for me, I was into this only because of Castlevania, and I would not normally watch something of this nature, and because of that, I dock it points only because it's not something that I personally would watch. You know what I mean? But overall, for the general public, I think that it's easily an 8, if not a 9, just based upon the voice and also because of the anime.
Yeah. I'm going to give it an 8.5. I have enjoyed a lot of it. There was some stuff that I had little quips about, but for the most part, it got me... I'm very critical with watching anime. I don't watch a lot of it, but when I do watch it, there's certain particular styles I like. This really hit me in the Ninja Scroll feels, and so because of that, that's why I really actually got in and enjoyed it. And it's got me actually looking at some of the other stuff that I'm actually talking to my son about. I'm asking, hey, what other anime is on Netflix that I can catch that's, you know, that's worth my time? And that's kind of nice. Cool.
See, I'm probably been pretty harsh on some things recently, but I'm giving this a 9 out of 10. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Everything from the art style, the content, the characterization, the villains, everything we talked about before, this hit me exactly where it needed to be, and I'm excited for more. And I knew it was going to be good. I was not expecting it to be this good for me. So thoroughly enjoyed it. Can't wait for more. Now,
time to Time to get into Homecoming. I'm so pumped about getting into Homecoming. I can't even begin to explain. From the moment I saw this, I was checking things off.
Can I say something right off the bat before we get started? And it is, how clever is the damn name?
Yes.
Along with it. That's all I'm going to say, and we can get into it more. But the name, like before I was kind of on the side, I was like, what is this? You know, I think I have an idea, but the name is very clever.
Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Stick to your roots, baby. Stick to your roots.
So we're going to try to hit this in a strategic way, so we're not shotgunning our opinions on the things that happened in the movie. So overall thoughts of Spider-Man Homecoming, just as a blanket, like blanket thoughts, and we'll get into story, we'll get into character. Mm-hmm. What were your overall thoughts going into the movie, and what were your overall thoughts leaving the movie?
Without getting into specifics, that's tough. Overall thoughts, I thought it was great, and it was one of the best Spider-Man movies.
I feel the same. It was great. One of the best Spider-Man movies. I also really felt that they did an outstanding job, and we'll go more in depth on this in a little bit, but I felt they did an outstanding job on the diversifying of the film with characters and whatnot. We'll talk a little more about that here in a few, I'm sure.
It made me go back and take a look at Tobey Maguire and look at some of the other films with Spider-Man, and it was like, man, you realize how they age. You know what I mean? Like, it just, they don't, this hit on Peter Parker's level and on Spider-Man's level, and then it hit with anybody who was just looking to go see a good movie, and I felt like it just trumped all of those films, not even with recency, just in basic theme and overall structure of a film. You know what I mean? You realize how silly the Tobey Maguire films are. I went back and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna watch Spider-Man 1. I'm gonna go see this. I'm gonna go see the kiss scene, because obviously, you know, we're gonna talk about it. It's in the movie later on. And it was just like, man, this is not good. Like, this doesn't hold up well.
They even made fun of the kiss scene in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, it just doesn't hold up. And so I think that it's a testament to not only the actors that are in, but also the script, which, by the way, was fantastic. If I by bar none, and I, you know me, I hate comic book movies. I hate them. Like, I just don't think they ever do justice to whatever it is. I came out of this movie and I hit our Discord immediately. I was like, wow, like, this is fantastic. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the best movies I've seen in a while, because I went in with such high expectations and it hit the expectations I was looking for by a country mile. So I really, really liked Spider-Man
Homecoming. Yeah, you kind of jumped on one thing there, but you mentioned the theme earlier in your speech, and I love the theme, because the theme in this movie was growing up too fast. And yep. You see it in multiple stages, and how he is growing up too fast with these powers, in both the powers and in real life, and how he needs to just grow up at a normal rate. And it explained all of that extremely well, and love that part. Love that theme.
Cajun, to your point, Derek, this reminded me a lot of like an 80s movie, like an 80s like teen like high school movie, like Breakfast Club. Like, it was, it had that feel. Like, it was like, okay, you don't grow up too fast. Like, you just be who you are at this moment. Like, that's what I liked.
And the soundtrack went along with that. And guess who you have in the film along with it? You got Robert Downey Jr., the king of 80s films, and all those films that were referenced in it. It's, you know, you have him along in there with it. So it would just, everything fed in. Another thing with this is, besides how well it was done, we had a bit of a worry about it. And that was Iron Man going to be in it too much? Mm-hmm. I feel that the way that they did this is the way to do movies that they're going to have as buddy up film, like this manner, where he needs to be his own, but you need the character to have some type of like little push off. It was perfect how much he was in it and how much he wasn't in it, even though he was there. It was just a perfect role model position. I mean, you see Happy more than you see Robert Downey.
If you count screen time, if you actually went and counted Robert Downey Jr.'s screen time, he probably didn't have a lot of large percentage of the screen time. But the scenes he was in, he really ate up and you were really focused on. So it feels like he was in it more than you might have thought he would be in it. But yeah, it felt great.
So let's talk about the characterization, because that's one of the major things is we talked about diversity. Let's talk about the characters in the film. Obviously, there's Spider-Man. Tom Hollingsworth's portrayal of this. Tom Holland, sorry. I apologize. Tom Holland, his portrayal is, to me, because of his age, what holds this character together. When you talk about Tobey Maguire, when you talk about, who was the other Spider-Man?
Andrew Garfield.
The age was way above what a teenage Spider-Man should have been, right? He is in that pocket, at least
looks-wise.
He looks like he's in that pocket, right? So it's believable for me to see him as a 14, 15-year-old Spider-Man. I believe that innocence that wasn't carried over. And his character was – the story was a Peter Parker story. It wasn't a Spider-Man story. It was a Peter Parker story. And so he had to play a lot out of costume, right? And so I felt like he was able to do that without a lot of tropes.
Right. So I think his age is probably – it is a lot closer, but also I think his height actually plays into it too. It's because I think Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield being taller kind of make him look older. Him being so much short, Tom Holland being so much shorter than a lot of the other characters, that plays into it, his age looking younger. But the school felt very real. It was a STEM school that he went to, but it felt really real. It didn't feel like a Hollywood school. I felt like these kids, this is actual classes. This is stuff these kids were doing, even some of the jokes. The bullies felt real, too. The bullies weren't too mean. They weren't too jockey. They weren't too they felt like a real boy, like a normal kid. And they did Flash Thompson as an ethnic character.
That's what I was just going to say. That's what I was going on, was that Flash Thompson. At first, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, hey, that's Agent Venom. I'm like, I'm like, okay, maybe I can see this.
Well, because tropes, they're not going to do this.
Yeah.
A trope would have been the jock, and instead of doing that, like I was talking about, they don't go with the trope. They go with the nerd bully, which is very prevalent. Prevalent right now. He was smart. He was a bully because he was smart
and rich,
But that's prevalent right now. That happens in high school. The person who isn't the bully is the bully because they're the cyber bully. Do you know what I mean? And that's that kind of character was portrayed, which I realized it wasn't the blonde hair, blue eyed, you know, Flash Thompson. It was something completely different.
It worked. Yeah, it worked so well. And that was the thing.
Honestly, I started to laugh with the penis Parker thing because it was like somebody would say that. That's a high school thing. Somebody would make that reference.
Your nickname from here on out. Yep. Somebody came up with a nickname and that's done with it. And you can. You either accept it or you don't, and it's just like that. That's he had to live his Spider-Man life, and they can call him whatever you want, but he's never there to defend himself.
And even his love interest, Liz, was a nerd. It wasn't Mary Jane. It was against everything that was typical Spider-Man stuff. She cared about the nerd group. She cared about the fact that they were in a competition, and the party was at her house. His homecoming was with her. So, like, again, an African-American actress with a white Spider-Man. You know what I mean? Like, it just offsets a lot of things where people think are cultural norms. And it just flipped it on its head. Which, again, we'll get to.
It
flipped on the head and when we talk about plot.
Yeah, so what?
Because I was going to say. Is that it? That was another thing that I love, because that's our future right there. This film felt like my boys are watching it, and my boys are smiling, they're laughing, and they're really seeing it. And when they watch these parts of the film, to them, this is the life they're living. This is what they're living right now. This is the norm for them, and this is what. And I absolutely, positively, adored that factor of this film. That was just. It was great. It's so well
executed. One thing that going into like what we found that they did really well in this, the villains felt really real. And we covered this just now in Castlevania. I want to know the villain's backstory, but I want to empathize with them. I don't want this person just to be evil because they were born evil. And except in movies, nobody is really evil. Everybody in the world now thinks they're doing right by themselves. Very few people, very few people except psychopaths, think they're actually doing evil. Most people who do evil think they're doing right. They just convince themselves that what they're doing right for is their most. So, and the villains we see in this movie all feel like they're doing what's right. And I mean, even even Aaron Davis, he's like, he was a villain a bit. He was a little nice bit, which is his character moving forward.
Yeah, Donald Glover's character was portrayed just enough. Even being a gangster character, he had that one eye that was cocked back while he was looking at him, like kind of give him that eye, which I thought was really cool. Then he called out Parker when he was trying to do that intimidation routine, which I thought was really cool. And Michael Keaton is so underbilled in this movie because he carries this character. He absolutely carries the Vulture, because the Vulture is a character from the moment we jump into this movie, which is the intro with him. The picture is by his daughter. So then you understand why he's doing all of this. And then you understand his crew. So he cares about his family, and his family is also his crew. And that's why he's doing it. And then eventually it becomes bigger than him. And so, but you feel for him. And it's the first time in a while where they haven't killed off a villain. They kept the villain alive. And it's like, okay, well, I get the fact, you know, thank you for carrying this villain into the next episode of something, because not all villains die. Right. Like, you know, and sometimes their motivation to save Parker is because somebody saved me or they saved my kid. Like, you get where he's coming from. I owe you that. This is my, I owe you. And we're even now. So the next time I go after you again, we're even, because I saved your ass this time. So I like that about Keaton. And I like the fact that they made that bonus scene with him, because it even served more towards his character. On top of that, you saved my daughter, so I'm going to let you go this round. You saved me, so now I'm going to let you go this round again. Like with the Scorpion character that they had in that bonus.
It shows that his rogues gallery has honor.
And it also, you know, he might
honor among the,
they might, he may end up helping him at some point. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. And it would be I think it would almost be a disservice to his character arc that they seem to be going towards, not having him come in some degree. I mean, this is just speculation, okay? How cool would it be if an unbilled character in one of the Infinity Wars movies shows up and to help out, and guess what? It's Vulture.
Yeah, no. I'd hate
it. Won't happen. It won't happen because Sony won't.
Because he's too soon introduced. He's in jail right now, and these villains are way bigger and stuff like that. You can let him do that in future Spider-Man movies and give him a breath and be surprised with it. But this close to it, I think I don't think it would play right, and you'd have to do too much circle writing to make that work. No.
Before we get into plots and themes, I'm going to touch base on a couple more characters, and then we'll get into that. So Michelle, so Zendaya's character, calling herself MJ.
Hated it. Hated it.
You didn't. Hated it. Okay. I opinions on what we thought about the fact that they made a nod to MJ, or that you thought it was a reach.
It was a reach.
Like, yeah. What it bothers me at is that they build her as, you know, when they're saying, oh, she's playing MJ. Well, what will bother me now is if you introduce someone as MJ and then later on you go and bring in a white girl, redhead, and that's Mary Jane. You know, if you were to go and do something like that, it would bother me because you've made people think that this is the MJ. I guess in some ways it would be a flip, but I don't know. It her character intrigued me because you could tell that she has an interest in Peter, but it seemed like it just, no. I don't know. It was a little mixed.
As a side note, I loved her character. I loved her portrayal of the
character. Yeah, I loved her portrayal of the character.
She didn't have many lines. Every line she had, it was like a head-turning line. She was absolutely great in every line she had. I just didn't like that it said, I think her name was Michelle Jones, call me MJ. Mm-hmm. The only way I can think you spin that is because she looks like such a pothead that she gets the nickname Mary Jane because she's such a pothead later. And that's, I think, the only way you can make it spin it to that. That's why she's called that in the future. Because it seems pretty evident, because the actress Zendaya, she has some fame behind her. She has following. She's obviously going to be going the Mary Jane route with her just because of that scene right there. I don't think that was a feeler. I think that was, this is where we're going. deal with it, everyone. But are they just going to keep her as Michelle Jones? Are they going to call her Mary Jane? I felt that that reveal was just, I think it was just weak. And I didn't like that reveal at all.
It felt added on at the end. It felt like a really lame tag on to me. Like, it was like with the last, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes of the movie. Because it felt like a tag on. Right. With the Robert Downey character, I know that we talked about how great it was in the scenes that he was in. What I appreciated that he used in his portrayal of Iron Man this time around was the absentee father, who then became present again.
Right.
He was absentee in the fact that he was basically just the robot who was talking to him while he was someplace else. And then he realized, oh crap, I need to be more involved. And then showed back up again in the middle of the plot. So I thought that he did that really well. I thought they teased the crap out of Robert Downey being in this movie, including the poster. And then the fact that he was in less than 10 minutes of this movie was awesome. Because I didn't want to see him enough. I wanted to see him just enough to be enough. And not a lot to be a lot. Thank you very much, because I don't... This was to draw people into the movie, because, oh, Robert Downey's in it. But he wasn't in the movie, which then you stuck around and you're like, oh shit, this is a really good movie.
Other things with that is that the suit, like, we were kind of wondering how much is he going to be in one suit, how much is he going to be in the other. It was like the perfect amount. It was like, okay, he got most of the movie in his regular Spider-Man suit to finish it up in the other, and I thought that was perfect. Like, because when you had watched the previews, it made it feel like he was going to be more in his original homemade suit, more of the film than which. So that's to Disney's, you know, thing. Although the trailers, they did a lot of their trailers stuff where there's stuff in the trailers that's not in the film.
Yeah, but this is another thing I didn't like. I mentioned something earlier about not liking the MJ. I didn't like how much of the movie was in the trailers. And this was a full-on Cajun was wrong here. I really thought, and I said this multiple times, that I thought there was going to be a surprise third act, a surprise villain, and a lot more to this movie, and all we were seeing is the first two acts. I was thoroughly wrong. The entire movie, every plot element, major action scene was in the trailer. A few twists weren't. To me, it didn't affect too much the quality of the movie. It did affect like how I was watching, because I knew what was coming next almost every single time in terms of major plot elements. But another thing I was wrong about was the Donald Glover thing. I mentioned this, but that he wasn't Miles Morales. I was kind of set on that for a second there. He's Miles Morales' uncle instead. And uncle. He's going to be playing the Prowler in movies to come, most likely. A sometimes villain, sometimes assistant. So we'll see that.
I thought Marissa Tomei's character was underplayed a little bit. I thought they could have used her a little bit more. And I come to find out that she was cut out of a lot of scenes. The other thing that I thought that they overplayed was the Ned character. This was literally half the time the Ned show. And then it was Tom Holland in the rest of it. And so
I've actually heard that a lot. Yeah. I've heard that a lot. However, when he brought the Death Star scene, instantly reminded me of you, Chris, and your Millennium Falcon.
No, it was cool. Like, I thought that Ned played really well in the scenes that he was in. And I thought the whole, like, the masturbation, or like the thing where he was like, I was watching porn. Yeah. Like, I thought it was a really cool line.
I wasn't having Spider-Man really, yeah,
Spider-Man. I was watching porn. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, my wife and my kids were all laughing at that. They were dying.
The web shooting thing, what I thought was really cool too. Oh, it was just too. It's too much Ned. Like, it was almost like a Robin to a Batman. And
it was great though. It was great.
It was just it was too. It was too much by probably at least 10
but you
minutes,
gotta think
10
about
screen time. Like, I didn't need to see him as much. I need to see him as much as I need to see Robert Downey.
But you got to think about the fact is that if you find out your best friend is a freaking superhero, you're going to be Ned. You know you're going to be it. You can't deny it.
He knows Spider-Man.
So you know what?
I was like, yeah. What?
Yeah.
See, that's one thing I didn't like. Like, if my friend is that and we have that conversation, probably my first reaction would be that. But after we have that talk, and I know he's a teenager, but come on, Ned. Hold it in, Ned. Just hold it in. It was a little too much. He was giving away too much on that. But I liked his character a lot. And you'll miss the best. I think the best Ned joke. I mean, the one in the computer lab was funny, but the one about chess, when he's like, you're standing there, and he's like, he's trying to hide, and the kid looks at him in the mirror, And he goes, hey, how's it going? Chess. That right there killed me. I don't know. It was just how a kid, an awkward kid, would just like say exactly what he's doing. And sort of like an offer, come play chess with me.
One last shout out for a character before we go into the plot of the show is Hannibal Buress as Coach Wilson. Specifically,
oh my god, that was
I guess he's a war criminal. He might be a war criminal at this point. Like, I mean, the guy's just sitting there. He's half asleep when he just leaves detention. Right? He plays the character.
Plays as himself. He's half asleep.
Yeah.
During his whole life, Hannibal Buress is. You watch any of his stand up, anything he does, the dude lives half asleep. So you just be Hannibal Buress and just take a nap right now and be fine with it. But he was, that was great casting.
So let's get into the plot of Spider-Man Homecoming. And the basis of this is a coming-of-age story of a person who realizes their power, is still learning to deal with what their power is. They have a father figure in, which we talked about, Tony Stark. And they're going against Vulture, who thinks that the leftovers that are of all the destruction from the Avengers, because his job is taken away, can be turned into a black market, basically, to sell some of these parts from the Avengers. And he's making money off of this. And so his thought process is I'm saving my family and I'm saving my guys. And it just starts to spin more and more out of control. And it leads to probably one of the biggest scenes in any Marvel movie so far, that car scene with him and Peter Parker. There's so much tension in that scene that between two non-comic book characters, because neither one of them were in a suit, is when he picks up his daughter and realizes, at first you don't realize that Liz Allen is the daughter of the Vulture. And that, as soon as he opens the door and you see Michael Keaton, you're like, oh shit. Like, I've talked to a lot of people. Your brain does not go to the fact that she is an African-American girl and Michael Keaton is a white guy and that's his daughter. But then you think to yourself, oh yeah, that's like normal America. Like, why would my brain not go to that? And so that catches you off guard. And then he has the knife and, you know, he's monkeying around and you see Parker just staring at him like, oh, I know this guy. Like, I know, I've seen him before.
Yeah, well, he's getting his prom pre-pictures taken. His eyes are off to the side. They're on Keaton
the entire time. There's two revelations there. There's the Peter revelation and how he acts to the Vulture. And he realizes it first. Then he's coming down from it and trying to figure out what he needs to do. But then they throw you another twist in that the Vulture realizes in the car ride that Peter Parker is Spider-Man through his daughter and their dialogue about trips, because he starts putting
his together. Daughter won't shut the F up. Shut up. Like, it's like, don't say that he wasn't there. Shut up. Yeah. And yeah, you're right, man. Like, that was a really awesome scene. And the moment you watch Keaton's eyes just you can see the twinkle, like, oh shit, I get it. Like, that's Peter Parker.
It's a continuing twinkle, because he puts a piece and then he starts questioning, because, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Oh, maybe I'm not wrong. Maybe I'm not wrong. And he starts putting it all together himself too. He takes over the question.
That uncomfortable moment where he says, I have a moment with him outside, you know, before you go in, I need to have a moment with him, and you know what's coming next. And he has the gun in his hand. He doesn't need to have the gun in his hand, but he does.
Cause that's him. That's who he is.
It's an intimidation thing. And then Peter walks in, and it's one of those things like, do I just continue on my day, or do I be who I think I should be? And he thinks about it for a second. And he goes back to that locker, which is infamous at this point. Like, he's lifted it four times in the movie at this point. Like, there's crap in there. We know it's in there. And he grabs the 3.0, which, side note, I get that Stark creates the entire Spider-Man suit, but Peter Parker is the one who creates the web, which is really great.
And the 3.0 is awesome, too, because this is the third iteration of Spider-Man.
That's what I was going to say. One Spider-Man 2, now 3.0, which is really cool. It just leads to it's the part of him where it goes, okay, I'm a boy, I need to step up. I don't even think of him thinking, I need to be Spider-Man so that Tony's proud of me. It's more of like, I need to be Spider-Man because I need to take care of this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that was, that's the catalyst to the whole end of the film, was him stepping up and realizing, because he got his suit taken away from him because he hacked the suit, and Tony's told him, he goes, if you're no one without the suit, then you don't deserve the suit.
Which is exactly what Tony Stark learned at the end of Iron Man 3. And that's why he blew up all the suits.
Exactly. Yeah.
The fact that Jennifer Connelly was the voice of the suit was awesome, because she's been in The Incredible Hulk, and so she has a connection to Marvel. And when he was in there, and he's like, he's talking to her, and he's flinging all these webs, and he's like, how long have you been here? And she's like, 37 minutes or 34 minutes. And he was like, Jesus, that's it? Yeah. like he's only a teenager. He doesn't have any respect of time at all. It's like, it feels like it should have been like 5 minutes. Like, come on, let's go.
So Jennifer Connelly was basically playing Jarvis, but Jennifer Connelly is also married to Jarvis.
Which is awesome. Yeah,
Jennifer Connelly is married to Paul Bettany, who plays the voice of Jarvis, and now is Vision. So that's... Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty cool. Little twist.
Why I liked her in this movie is because that in Spider-Man, if you read the comics, obviously, there's internal dialogue all the time with Spider-Man. He constantly talks to himself and has the air bubbles where it's like, what am I thinking on the inside? You never know that. But if he's talking to her, it was Karen, right? Is that the name of the...
Yeah,
Karen.
He gave her name Karen.
If he talks to Karen, that's his internal monologue. So you get to voice out the internal monologue, and you get to hear exactly what he's doing or what he's thinking in that process. I really like a girl. She doesn't like me back. He's thinking all of these things, but he's not going to talk to himself and say that, but he will if it's somebody who he thinks is going to listen to him, which is for the audience's sake more than anything else.
Yeah, and she's like, kiss her now, tell her now. And he's like, no.
He's like, stop it. I don't want to shoot these. Just give me the damn regular web. Yeah. Like, especially in the truck scene where he's like, can't figure out how to just get a regular web to shoot out. And it's Peter learning his powers. And we still don't see Spider-Sense yet. We get a glimpse of it.
No. Nope.
Because he's like, you can't catch me. And he does that dodge thing with the vulture. And he can flip really quick. But you don't catch that whole...
I'm getting tingly.
Yeah, the tingly, the original Spider-Man stuff. Like mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The Tobey Maguire stuff where everything slows down to the point where it's like slow motion and he's spinning around.
Yeah, it's that Matrix time stuff. They didn't use any of those tricks. No. Everybody knows Spider-Man at this point. We didn't see Uncle Ben die. We didn't see Spider-Sense. At this point, movie 6, or if you consider Civil War 7, you know what you're getting with Spider-Man. You don't need to retell these things. You don't need to reshow these things. If it doesn't affect this story, you don't need to show it.
It might be something, too, and he just hasn't learned it yet. Like, he doesn't know what that means.
How good also was that they show the opening of the movie is him, his home video of Civil War and his entry into Civil War.
I forgot to even talk about that. Man, yes, that was so good. I love seeing that. This guy, actually, one good scene in Batman vs. Superman, seeing the Superman versus Zod fight from a different perspective. This brought it. You get to see the Civil War Airport fight from a different perspective. That was great.
What I really liked about this part was the fact that Peter Parker is a reporter, right? So a reporter in this day and age is on YouTube. They show things as they happen, when they happen. So that's what he's doing. He's camming himself and showing that stuff, and he's doing it as it happens, which is, it's the updated version of him being a reporter.
And that's how Spider-Man is famous. Everybody, like at least 3 times in the show, they're like, oh, you're the Spider-Man from YouTube.
Do a flip. And he does that backflip, which is kind of, hey, Spidey, we're all from New York. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a nod to that. Overall, what are your feelings as far as a rating for Spider-Man Homecoming? Like, what were your thoughts as far as the Marvel Universe, as far as an individual film, and where you think it takes maybe the Marvel Universe?
Nine.
All of that goes into consideration in mine. Like I said, I didn't like the MJ thing. I didn't like how the movies and the trailers. One other thing I didn't like that I didn't get to mention was I didn't like Happy Hogan's haplessness. I thought it was too much, overplayed. But I'll go with an 8.5 out of 10. I think after all that, you still made an amazing movie, and each one of those things loses something for me. But 8.5 out of 10, best Spider-Man movie, and probably the best solo. I mean, you've kind of taken the place of Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe of the best solo movie at this point. And maybe right now, I never give much thought of it. I might still give Wonder Woman slightly better for a few other reasons in terms of better solo movie, but Wonder Woman had more issues than Spider-Man did. It had better big stuff than Spider-Man did, but it had more issues than Spider-Man did. But man, it was overall, if you want a fun time and you want to be able to take your kids too, because you can take almost any age to see this movie.
I took my nine-year-old to go see it, and he absolutely had a blast. Shout out to John Favreau for casting himself as Happy, 80 years ago, because he got a bunch of playtime now in this. Also directed, Iron Man on top of all of that. So like he had the original in his back pocket.
He's a director.
But
right now.
I mean, he like some of his stuff. By the way, I don't want to derail from a lot of stuff, but he did drop a bunch of Easter eggs when he talked about Captain America's shield. He talked about Thor's belt, and he threw out a stuff for about Iron Man 2. So apparently there were about 10 to 15 things he named off. They cut it down to those three things. Intend on seeing those in Avengers. Like, that's carrying on to Thor Ragnarok. That's carrying on to the Avengers Infinity War.
But the other thing is, how about the ending where Aunt May finally finds out?
Oh, that F-bomb was awesome. Yeah. Like, it cut right at the end, and I had a nine-year-old watching it, too. I'm like, she didn't say it.
Okay, Chris, what's your rating?
I would give this a 9. And again, I legit hate comic book movies, and I just gushed over this thing. It could, because it didn't remind me of a comic book movie. It reminded me of an 80s film. It reminded me of 16 Candles and all those type of movies. And I appreciated that Spider-Man happened to be in it, because it was more Peter Parker to me than it was Spider-Man. And I was more interested in Tom Holland as Peter Parker than I was as Spider-Man.
Right.
For me, it was amazing.
One thing, and we can, now that we've given all our reviews, but we can also kind of cover something that the movie even did at its very, very, very end as well, too. The Captain America cameos.
Those were awesome. and the fact that they cut a ton of those and only put a few of them in the movie, so you know that the Blu-ray DVD is going to have all of them, like, which I thought was really good. It was a great way to see him kind of be funny, and there's way more, so I can't even wait to see what, like...
And that was his original cap. That was his one from Avengers 1. That was the original Avengers Captain.
Because that was around the time when he was super popular. So he made all these videos, like the videos we watched in our PE class and other classes. But except they just got the Captain America guy to do it, because kids do what he does. And so, but man.
So you're in detention.
Yeah. Not in the movie at all. All in VHS format. And it was great. All right.
The nods that they gave were very subtle in this. So just at the tail end, they gave us a nod to Scorpion, which potentially could be, we're talking to the Sinister Six. Obviously, they had Vulture in there. They kept Vulture alive, which I think leads into Sinister Six, but that could be just a guess. But I think that's a good guesstimation. Shocker was still in there, and they left room to play with some other characters. So they gave you nods to these characters, but they didn't specifically name them. They didn't name Scorpion, but he had the scorpion on his neck, and he also had they also didn't name Miles Morales, right? But they gave you a nod to Miles Morales. So what I liked about this is it was never in your face about we're gonna play to the crowd, but we're gonna do it to the people who are true fans, and we're gonna do it in such subtle ways that it still takes care of the movie, but also gives you a little bit of what you need to.
All right. So what are we gonna cover next week, guys? Any planned show watchings, movie watchings?
Well, I know what I'm watching Sunday. Yeah,
Game of Thrones,
which will be in its own episode.
That its own episode. Friends from College.
Yes, Friends from College is next week too.
And War of the Planet of the Apes. So.
Some
or all of us will have seen those as well, and we're gonna cover all three of those in some form or capacity next week.
So let's get in our cue hype train.
First up in our cue hype train, if you'll notice, it has a different brand now, because we have hype trains on each of our shows that are gonna cover specific topics that we have stuff to get hype about. And first, Amazon's The Tick trailer. So The Tick is getting its third TV series, and you might have seen the pilot, and it might look familiar to you, because the pilot was released on Amazon a year ago. That's why it seems familiar. It was not well received. and it looks to be redone. The suit was completely redone. And now, in this trailer, I still don't like the actor's portrayal of the Tick. Anybody else seen this trailer? What are your thoughts?
I haven't seen the trailer, but I actually remember reporting on my or reviewing the pilot, and I actually really enjoyed the pilot.
See, Patrick Warburton.
The suit was you can't compare it to him. That's the thing. You got to step aside. I know he is embodiment of the Tick, but you got to take when they chose not to have him. You have to take a step out and look at it at this new actor's portrayal of it and be able to accept it. Otherwise, there's no way you could ever enjoy something.
I know, and I don't think I can
without a beat him.
I've given other people the crap for this, and for me, I don't think I can because when I see him, it's like the Tick is such a specific voice in my mind.
He doesn't have the hero chin either.
It just doesn't fit, and right now it doesn't work. And I might give it a shot. I might, but right now, it comes out August 25th, full season. I'll probably just scan reviews, hear what some of you might say about it because it's a rough one for me at this point.
So next up, talking about things that are coming back. You know, we talked a lot about True Detective season one, how much we enjoyed it. And then True Detective season two, how it kind of wavered on the formula. So how do you start that back up? Now I'm probably going to butcher his name, but you get
Mahershala Ali.
Okay. So he's going to be, you know, he's a big time Oscar winner now. He's going to be the lead in True Detective season three. That right there, folks, is how you get attention put back onto something and say, hey, guess what? We're coming back. Third time's a charm. We're going to knock out better than the first season. I'm just going to say, I don't know, maybe, but I'm going to put as an actor, I've seen him play good guy. I've seen him play bad guy. And he plays both very believably. I think that he is going to bring something different to the series, and I think it's going to be excellent. That's my opinion.
This is a story based,
yeah.
So it's like all,
it's got to it's the written story. It's only going to be as good as the story.
The story for season two was bad. It lives that's and why dies it by failed.
The writer. It lives and dies by the writer creator. I forget the guy's name. It lives and dies by him. He was rushing the last one. HBO's head of television came out and apologized for rushing him. It gave him time to do it. I think Mahershala Ali is going to be great. I think Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey were, I think, even bigger star power names just because of their depth and breadth. Ali is present now doing some great stuff, but this is living and dying by the quality of the script and screenplay that's going to be created. And if you give enough time, then I think that's what they did here. And so better than season two, we shall see it better than season one. That's a stretch. That's one of the best seasons of any show ever. That's a tough one.
Wonder Woman 2, the setting is now going to be in the 80s, which I found super interesting because it totally brought me back to like old school 70s Wonder Woman. And it's going to be in the Cold War, which I think is relevant with today's Russian controversies because everybody remembers the Cold War. Everybody remembers the missiles and, you know, how Reagan stopped any type of battle with Russia, and with everything that's going on with Trump now and Russia, it's really a relevant topic. It also brings her closer to the future, which is closer to present day, which I don't think they want to go much farther. They don't want to go so slow as to go from what was she in the 20s? Was it the 20s?
Yeah,
right. 20s or
30s? Yeah, it was early 10s, 20s was World War One.
10s, 20s. Yeah, I mean, if we're gonna go to the 50s, then we're gonna go to the 70s. I mean, you're trying to bring this as close to present day as possible because with Justice League, you want her to be able to have a third film with whatever is going on in Justice League 2. So you want to keep her as consistent as possible. It also brings the ability to bring other characters into her films, which I think that they want to do. They don't want her to just hold tight on solo films because every major, you know, superhero character eventually gets somebody else hopping in if you're going to follow the Marvel right. theme, which is what I think they're trying to do right now. So
all of that fit. All
I'm not
that
opposed
fit.
To
it.
I'm not,
and I mentioned that before. For me, I would have wanted it to be more staged. Vietnam, Korea, different major conflicts. But what you're saying really makes a lot of sense if you had to bring in other characters into it. And there is enough time. If they wanted to do something after the Cold War, there is enough physical time to be able to do something in the relevant history. Bosnia conflict, Iraq war. You can do, if you needed her to step into major conflicts, which seems to be the major theme of her being involved, you could still have time to do that with other major conflicts. But yeah, hitting it on the, putting the villain or the villainous country in this as Russia, which hasn't been done in movies lately, is very timely considering the modern news cycles.
The only thing that really upsets me is the fact that if they do this and they bring somebody else in, it tells me they don't have enough trust in her to be a solo character, which is the whole it was my biggest beef. Don't bring somebody else into a Wonder Woman film. She can carry a film.
Right.
She's strong. She's a strong enough. She is Superman, but a female. You don't need Batman. You don't need the Flash. You don't need anybody else. Nothing can hurt her. So
Spider-Man
didn't
need Iron Man, but it definitely helped having a different superhero with a different perspective.
But she's such a strong character. That's the problem. Spider-Man is a weak character. Spider-Man
in this one,
15-year-old Peter Parker. Yeah, in this one. Yeah, a 15-year-old Peter Parker is a weak character. She's already strong-willed if you see her in this Wonder Woman film. So she doesn't need somebody to help her out. In fact, she bucks somebody else trying to help her a lot of the time.
Yeah. And setting it like this, and because she's unknown to Batman and Superman coming into BVS, it really, like, it would have to be an unknown character helping her. If anybody did help her in this one, expanding their universe, it would have to be a B or C grade other superhero being brought into the mix to help her in this. And I really am curious to see how they're going to do it, because when I first heard Cold War, I was like, what part of the Cold War could it be in? But they did come out and say it was the 80s Cold War. So it's definitely going to be a little more espionage, because probably the only conflict of the Cold War was the Cuban Missile Crisis.
That would be where I'd guess they'd
go. And that was the 60s, 70s. So if they're doing 80s, it's not going to be that conflict.
The other thing that's super weird is they talked that Chris Pine's going to be in this movie. Confirmed. So how they're going to bring him back. Yeah, confirmed. Chris Pine will be in this movie.
Yeah.
So now we're talking, what, a 60, 70-year-old Chris Pine? I mean, you assume he's in his 20s? Mm-hmm. In the 10s or 20s, and now we're in the 80s? I mean, what is he going to be?
Oh, no. He's going to be 80. He's going to be
80. Yeah,
he's going to be really old. Unless they do, like, right after the last one to come forward with it. But I don't like that knowledge being out there that Chris Pine's in it, because it was so left in the air that he was
even allowed to begin with
in the last one.
Yeah.
I don't like it. But at the same time, he was a likable character. I would have much rather than brought somebody else in and killed them off. I think that's just a hero always lives trope, and Chris Pine wasn't the hero in the first movie, in the Wonder Woman movie. Wonder Woman was, so letting him sacrifice and die, I think, could have been a better play there.
So a director that's trying to seek some relevancy lately is Quentin Tarantino, and you have some information about that.
Yeah, so Quentin Tarantino is making a couple of movies. I read a news article about one he was reading, but when I searched the actual title, it's untitled as of this point, but I found something else. He's making Kill Bill Volume 3, and so that's pretty cool to hear that, because I love those styles of those shows, and there's more story to tell there. And he's also making a movie about Charles Manson, and that his whole guild and the murders and how they went down. And with Manson still being alive, that has a lot of relevance to it now as well.
Do they have a major actor for Manson at all?
No. No cast has been announced. He's just Quentin Tarantino is producing or writing and directing both of those. So
very, very
unknown
cool.
Timing on any of that stuff. But dude can't make a bad movie. And taking on a topic from history like Manson is, I kind of hope he sticks to history, but he's not been known for that. Look at Inglourious Basterds. He does major spins on it. But with this, I would like to see Tarantino's spin on actual history without it being like a complete rewrite. But we shall see. It's going to be good no matter what, but that's just a preference for me.
So this is going to be the first half of our podcast. This is going to be the TV and film version for Geekologist Radio. We're going to, again, try something different. We're going to split up the casts. We're going to have our hype train, and we're going to have our basically a secondary version of Game On in our gaming version. So like we'll have current news and upcoming news to speak of. And again, we're going to kind of spread this out over at least a week. So it may be coming out on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, Thursday. We're really still trying to figure that out. If you have any comments, any concerns, or anything you'd like to add, we are all ears, believe us. We're just trying to kind of separate this up so that people who are interested in the film and TV stuff can get their fill, and then people who are interested in the game stuff can get their fill. So for us at Geekologist Radio, that would be Cajun Saint on Twitter. Yep.
Caucasian correct? Saint on Twitter, and that's basically where you can find me. Damien stepped out. He might enter a stinger here or a few later.
Or if not, he's at Mr. Damien Nash. For myself, I'm at Two Wolves. And for Geekologist Radio and our first separated up cast, we are out.